ಜಯ ರಾಧಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಯಶೋರನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಶೋರನಂದನ ವ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಮುನ ತೀರವನ ಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 2, Text 70. Yeah, we can put it up if that's okay. This is chapter 2, text 70. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishantyavat. Tadvakamayam pravishanti sarve ಸಶಾಂತಿಮಾಪ್ನೋತಿ ನ ಕಾಮಕಾಮಿ. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. In purport. Although the vast ocean is always filled with water, it is always, especially during the rainy season, being filled with much more water. But the ocean remains the same, steady. It is not agitated, nor does it cross beyond the limit of its brink. That is also true of a person fixed in Krishna consciousness. As long as one has the material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. The devotee, however, is not disturbed by such desires because of his fullness. A Krishna conscious man is not in need of anything because the Lord fulfills all his material necessities. Therefore, he is like the ocean, always full in himself. Desires may come to him like the waters of the rivers that flow into the ocean, but he is steady in his activities, and he is not even slightly disturbed by desires for sense gratification. That is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean, and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires, even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires, but the person in Krishna consciousness is happy in the service of the Lord, and he has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. The devotees of Krishna have no material desires, and therefore they are in perfect peace. Mukyan Timurandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatan Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagina Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees that we can say something for the pleasure of Shishi Radhe Shyam, Krishna Balaram, Shri Gornita. May we also speak aligned with Guru Parampara, and may all the devotees assembled here benefit from the message of the Bhagavad Gita. So again, this is text 70 of chapter 2. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, besides being a brief summary of the whole Gita, it's also traditionally called, in Sanskrit, this chapter is called Sankhya Yoga. San means completely, and Kya means to count or to describe. So the idea is that this world is made up of so many different elements and components. And what do all these elements and energies have in common? They're all born and emanate from the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna. Janmadyasyataha. Everything, all the elements come from Krishna. And it says in the Gita elsewhere, Bina Prakriti. that these, the material elements and all the different energies of the material nature are separated. Bina means separated, separated energies of the Lord. And Prabhupada gives an interesting example of separated energy. He said in one place, just like I'm speaking right now, and it's being recorded, so then I may go away, you listen to that recording. That is my separated energy. It is me, but it's not me. It's my voice, it's separated from me. But in one sense, when you hear Prabhupada's voice, that is Prabhupada. And so this whole material creation is the separated energy of the Lord. It is one and different from Him. So to understand these energies and to describe them, that is called Sankhya Yoga. Why is it yoga? Right, because even material scientists, they'll describe all the different elements. What was that in, I'm trying to remember, in school science class, you have that periodic table of elements. So even scientists, they're learning the different elements, describing them. So what makes this yoga? Because it's yoga because the motive of the yogi is always self-realization. So they're studying all the different elements to finally understand that, but I'm the one who's studying, the one who's analyzing, is I'm different than all of these material elements. So the discrimination becomes so refined that their minds become so purified and refined from discriminating that they start to see the most fundamental discrimination, that between matter and spirit. They actually can begin to perceive the difference. So, and that's important. Why? Because the spirit soul is identified with the gross and subtle material elements. We're identified with this body. We're also identified with the mind. So subtle or gross, the spirit is identified with gross and subtle matter. It's a misidentification, and it's the cause of all of our confusion and frustration and suffering. So the Sankhya Yogi, there are not too many of them left, Sankhya Yogis, but actually it's a tradition. It's another kind of yoga. There's one person who wrote a commentary on the Yoga Sutras, Hari Harananda, I believe his name was. But he claims to be one of the last followers, a bona fide Sankhya Yogi. And he's not from too long ago. He has actually a commentary of the Yoga Sutras. But it's kind of like a school that's kind of come to an end in some ways. So Sankhya Yoga, this is a nice example I heard. What a Sankhya Yogi does. Suppose you go to see a movie. You're sitting in a movie theater. And when we go to a movie theater, we're so identified with the story and with the characters that if the character is happy, we become happy. If the character, suddenly some tragedy takes place, and then we're in tears. This is the power of identification. Then there's some jokes in the movie, we start to laugh. We do whatever happens on the screen because of the identification. We're doing everything that's being done by that character. So a Sankhya Yogi, the way they think is that they're watching this movie and they start to wonder, what is the screen that's there? Instead of identifying, they're wondering, what is this screen made of? This is some vinyl screen, and somehow light is reflecting onto the screen. And they look back, and the light is coming from a projector. You see, it's a whole different way of viewing the world. Instead of full identification, they start to analyze, what is matter? And they get some discrimination, and they realize also, I'm just sitting here watching this. That's not me. Who am I that's watching all of this, that's analyzing the material elements? So I'm different from all of this. This is where Sankhya Yoga leads, finally, to realizing that the self, there's matter, and there's the one who is observing matter, the spirit. That distinction is made. So all of this is actually relevant for devotees. Because Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he makes it his business to reunite all these different yogas and show the whole picture. So it's not that this is totally irrelevant for a devotee. He takes some of these principles of Sankhya Yoga and he connects it to, okay, you have this knowledge, now connect it to activity, karma. And then bring, and with the jnana of Sankhya Yoga and the karma, the activity, now bring devotion into it, love. So Krishna in the Gita, he's taking these different yogas and he's kind of bringing them all back and showing the whole picture. Because all these yogas have the tendency to become separate paths and become totally separate and isolated from each other. And then we start to think, oh, this is a path, that is a path, that is a path. And, but the Gita presents it as a whole. It emphasizes bhakti as the supreme, as the essence. But it talks about the importance of the principles of karma yoga, jnana yoga. Brings them all together. So, in this 70th verse here, we're hearing about the symptoms of what's called stitta pragya. Stitta means steady or stable. Arjuna asks a question. What are the symptoms of the stitta pragya? Stitta means steady, stable, and pragya can mean intelligence or consciousness. So a person who has steady consciousness, what are the symptoms? And then this verse is given by Krishna. And it's a very powerful verse, I find, because it contains the seed of a whole new approach to life. Because the way it normally works for all of us in this material world, we have certain things happen outside of us, and then our minds get into it and get involved into it. Right? Where do we focus our attention? Some event takes place. Something's going on outside of us. And all of us just, you know, people's minds are very passionate. And they're rushing in many different directions. And every new crisis causes opinions to fly back and forth. Right? Like each post on social media, it invokes thousands and sometimes of hundreds of thousands of reactions from other people, and they have their statements. And this is the material world. Something is happening outside of us, and we get involved, we get into it, we get distracted. And we each all add a little explosion to the crisis of the moment. You know, by our opinions and ideas, we have different ideas, we want to take the action because of what's happening outside of us. We get involved. What is all of this doing? It's actually just accelerating the wheels of karma. We accelerate karma. You know, just imagine by one thing on the computer nowadays, one thing is said by somebody, and then just think of all the reactions. Everyone's got to put, they dig into themselves and give their own statement. And in this way, everything is just, the karma is actually accelerating, increasing from all of this involvement. So, the big wheels of karma, there are very big wheels, and all the events taking place in the world, and our destiny, and the different reactions. But actually, things are happening in the material world in the only way that they can, because of the state of consciousness of the people. Things are taking place in the only way that they can take place, because the state of consciousness, the collective state of consciousness, will produce certain results. And that's not an easy thing to change, state of consciousness. That's a science. What is the science of changing your state of consciousness? Nobody knows that. We have a little change, we make little modifications within the modes of nature. But that's all considered material consciousness. Whether ignorance, passion, or goodness, we make little shifts. And then eventually you come up to goodness, but you have to come back down. So there's no stability in that. So the changes we make are very temporary. But what's amazing about the Bhagavad Gita, it directs us kind of in a different place, in a different way. The main point of the Gita, from what I can understand and what I read and hear, is that we're meant to be kind of neutral to what happens outside. A kind of neutrality. In fact, that neutrality is called yoga, sama, the platform of equanimity. And then you direct yourself to the little wheels going on within you. The little wheels going on in each person, there are little wheels, and that creates the big wheels of karma. What's that little wheel inside of us? There are little wheels, there's a wheel, there's a cycle going on inside of each person. And because there's that small cycle within us, it creates a very big karmic cycle outside of us. So we talk about reincarnation. You know, this law of repeated birth and death for all living beings. Why does it exist? Somehow it's happening within us, and therefore it's also created outside of us. What is that cycle within us? That's also described in some places. We're going to discuss that a little bit now. So we have something called the citta, which Prabhupada translates as contaminated consciousness. And it's filled with samskaras, with impressions, not just from this life, but from all of our lives. Just imagine, all the lives. And there are impressions and experiences. And those, some are, only few of them are active right now from this present life and maybe something from previous. They're not all active, right? We cannot remember when we were somebody else so long ago. So some are not active, but they're there. And all of these samskaras, eventually they rise up into our conscious mind and they take the form of desires. their life. And for a person, that's all they know. So they're so agitated every moment, hoping for that things go well, and destroyed when things don't. So the devotee starts to shift from that. Oh, there's another life of just my serving, my hearing, my chanting, my service. And if you start to get a little taste for that, then when those other things come, because they continue to come, action and reaction, we still have our karma that's manifesting. So we do, that's okay. That just happened in my life. That's all right. I stay nice and steady right here in Krishna consciousness. So what happens is this closed loop, it opens up a little bit and starts to become an upward spiral. And you're actually going up. Like, you know, circles are still there, but now you're moving up. Instead of just one place over and over again, just like that song. Every day seems the same. I'm caught in this loop. But as we add Krishna consciousness and connect our desires to Krishna service, we make a little space and things now start to, they're still circling, but now they're going up. And the closer we get to Krishna, then a deep dependence on Krishna enters the heart, a deep trust. And as Prabhupada mentions here, then the devotee is the one, is the only one who really achieves perfect peace. It's described here. A state of fullness. So, in this way, we're crossing this material ocean. The material world is also compared to an ocean. But by this process, all of these things, we have our devotional service, we have knowledge, so much knowledge is given by the acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada, we have to take that also. Some detachment is required also. We bring all these things in. And we start to enter into actually another ocean. Another kind of ocean exists also. Right? Lord Chaitanya told Rupa Goswami, he said, Krishna consciousness is like a limitless ocean, and I'm going to remove one drop from that ocean. It's like an ocean of love. I'm going to remove one drop and give it to you, my dear Rupa, so that you can taste it. Actually, from that conversation with Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami, from that conversation, Rupa Goswami wrote the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's another ocean, the ocean of the rasa of bhakti. But it was from Lord Chaitanya giving him one drop. And then he expanded on it by giving this amazing literature, the whole science of rasa, of devotional service. So the six Goswamis, this, I was looking at this beautiful song, Sat Goswami Astakam. Ocean is a big theme in that song. They're called oceans of love of God. They're also said that they're swimming in the ocean of love. Gopi Bhava Rasamla Tamdi Lahari Kalola Magno Muhur. That they're always absorbed in the waves, the moving waves of this ocean of love, of the love of the gopis. What are they doing in that ocean? They're singing, they're dancing, they're serving others with compassion. They're pleasing, they're all pleasing to everyone in their activities. Just imagine the six Goswamis just walking, wandering, you know, in Vrindavan, pleasing to everyone. Compassion, giving to everyone, singing the glories of Govinda, dancing. They're the greatest scholars, and they're joyfully dancing. So nice, right? You think scholarly person, very dry, you know, intellectual. But they're so graceful, so beautiful. So this is the real peace, the peace of the devotee, the real peace and joy. Only devotee has that peace. Krishna Bhakta, Nishkama, Ataiva, Shanta. Only the devotee actually attains that state of peace. And this is the purpose of knowledge. This is the purpose of Sankhya Yoga that we're talking about here. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. That we need knowledge, we need renunciation, some detachment, and we need bhakti. The followers of Lord Chaitanya, they have learned these three things from Lord Chaitanya. What is real knowledge? What is real detachment? What is real bhakti? Followers of Lord Chaitanya have learned this from him. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. So, this knowledge as given in the Gita, Sankhya Yoga, it actually culminates in pure loving devotion to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the path of perfect peace. one becomes completely full. So large, so full, so much depth, just like an ocean, that all the desires, everything happening, whatever comes to your life, it's okay. You stay stable and connected because of that connection to Krishna. So we'll stop here. If there are any thoughts, comments, questions, Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
What about neutrality? That's one of these relationships, neutrality.
Yes.
What, we never hear much about that. Is it transcendental? Is it impersonal?
Yes. So what about neutrality? It is also considered a relationship with the Lord. Shantaras. The kind of where one is in a state of awe. One is maybe not directly serving the Lord as a servant or as a friend or as a parent or as a lover. From a distance, one just is in a state of awe, the majesty, the power of the Lord, and simply appreciates that power, and they're kind of in a neutral state. It's very advanced. That's a kind of rasa. Now from our level, the Gita talks about neutrality as well as a kind of quality that we should cultivate to get to the spiritual platform, equanimity. Right? So that's why I was saying all the happenings of the world, they have to happen because of the state of consciousness of people and of the collective state of consciousness. So in one sense, we can withdraw a little bit from it. Maybe we can go in and do some service, help out. I'm not saying don't do anything in the material world, but a part of us knows. We know what the material world is. It's action and reaction. And so we know more. My real focus is Krishna, my consciousness. Let me turn that way. And so one becomes neutral, in a sense, because that will be helpful for spiritual advancement. That's the Prabhupada calls the Sama platform, the platform of Sama, equanimity. So those are two kinds of neutrality.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have some thoughts, comments, questions?
I was just wondering about, it sounds like this path that you were describing, Shankhya Yoga, is just to others.
associated with the verb. So these three should all be operating simultaneously. So the association with the verb is with everything. That makes everything possible. Just some thoughts. At least we should realize the depth of how entrapped we are. How I'm using very little free will. But our good fortune is that there are certain personalities. Again, the poor devotee is operating from free will. So they have certain desires, and those are spiritual desires, and now we connect ourselves to those wishes and those desires. And in this way, we're purifying our heart. And then we may eventually have the same desire as the spiritual master desire for me. Right? Spiritual master says, go do this. And we find this resistance in our heart, but we try to do it. That's good. We're connected now. We're aligned with the guru's desire, spiritual desire. And through that connection, through that obedience, through that service, then we start to want the same thing that was wanted for me, from me. And then you're connected. Then you're connected in a deeper way. So spiritual desire, our own spiritual desires, we should just consider it a far-off thing. Far off. It's going to take some time, but I've been blessed with one who is giving me, I'm aligning myself with the spiritual desires of one who actually has spiritual desires, and that's our prophet. And then you'll start to awaken. One day, true spiritual desires will begin to awaken. It'll happen naturally. We don't have to think, is this a material desire or a spiritual desire? You know, even that confusion shows that it's probably not a spiritual desire, because the spiritual desire, when it awakens, it is very powerful. And what is it going to be? It's the seva vritti, the desire to serve, actually. Vritti, we talked about, Yoga Sutra says we have to stop the oscillations of vrittis. But the Vishnu Chakravarti gives this term, seva vritti. There's a vritti, there's an oscillation of the mind that thinks it can serve. That is from the soul. So once you start to really feel that in your heart. I want to serve, actually. And that serving to someone commanding me to serve. We have to start that way. If something starts to awaken, yes, service. We start to have faith in that. We want more of that. That's spiritual desire. And that comes by linking ourselves with the spiritual desire of the group.
You experience it very differently. Like, I really want to serve this. I know I should say it's a very different experience, but
yeah, it's a very beautiful, different experience. Sometimes, you know, some little glimpse, some little faith comes in that, oh yes, this is actually where real satisfaction is in serving. You get some experience that increases our faith. Yeah. Very different quality.
I guess what I can surmise is kind of that self-introspection, but how do we expand that mind? Because it can be so painful with the waves that come with all the desires, and they feel as if I don't fulfill this desire, it's going to follow me from my entire life, it's going to torment me my entire life if I don't fulfill this desire. Starving it only makes it stronger. So how do I, but I know maybe it's really not a healthy desire. So how do I expand my mind in order to allow that desire to truly fade away into indifference?
So you can see when we read scripture, such a big picture of things, right? And we start wondering, you know, you read the Bhagavatam, suddenly we're talking about Mahavishnu. Shiva Gatashai Vishnu, these gigantic forms of the Lord, seeing how this whole creation is being operated. You know, the Bhagavatam sometimes really becomes this macrocosm. And actually, by hearing that, a picture of things first, maybe it's a little theoretical, but actually you're growing into that. That you're not this body. You're an eternal soul that's fallen into this material world. This is a whole different perspective, a much bigger perspective. When you don't have that, imagine how closed you are. When you don't start to open up to the possibility of bigger things, higher things. And I'm actually a soul that's fallen into this material world. I have an eternal relationship with God. How do I reconnect to that relationship? These things are all so much larger than the closed average state of mind, which is just this one life. Everything is here and now, and let me just get a little pleasure. Somehow get some relief. So by hearing, by chanting, Krishna is unlimited. You know? We chant the name. The name is unlimited. We start to enter into the name. You see, Krishna has all his energies are contained in his name. Isn't that amazing? It's just one word you say. And in that one word is contained infinite energies of God. Now first, okay, I don't have the realization, right? But hear that thing. Chant. Put a little attention into that. Your mind is expanding. The possibility allows for these things. If you to experience anything, first you have to accept that at least it's possible. If you say it's not possible, then you cannot experience it. If you say, wow, Krishna's name is unlimited. Well, I don't realize that when I'm chanting, but let me bring that into my chanting for a moment and see, explore that. These are some ways of expanding the mind. And when the mind begins to expand, then these pushings of the desires, they become less of an agitation. So like you said, our mind maybe is not so expanded, and so we're struggling with the desire. Sometimes I have to fulfill it. Okay, I just have to do it. Just stay aware of that whole thought. You know? Okay, where's the material desire? It's not going to help me, but it's not giving me any break. My mind is absorbed in it. Now let me just, you know, depending on what it is, you know, of course we want to use our discrimination. But sometimes we just have to fulfill it, experience that, and then watch the whole thing happening. And see, huh, okay. Well, that's out of the way. Krishna, please, next time, give me the strength, you know, to overcome. And then maybe sometimes we'll find that we can let it go. Maybe sometimes we find that we can just let it pass. It comes up in the mind, and I just get into something else, and it passes. I forget about it. So all these things are possible. And then sometimes the desires can be, again, connected. Well, I have this desire for wealth. It's very strong in me. I can't seem to give it up. Okay, so I'm going to make money then. And let me be very generous with that money. Let me offer that in some service. Okay, I want fame. Okay, well, like Prabhupada once said to his Western disciples, what is the use of you being American if you don't do something wonderful? In one sense, Prabhupada was like fanning that spark, which is kind of a material, like America thinks they got to do everything big and the best and wonderful, right? It's not a spiritual desire. The Prabhupada said, what is the use of you being American if you don't do something wonderful? Like encouraging it. And by now, do something wonderful for Krishna. Make something big and wonderful. Feel a wonderful offering. So find a link. There's always a link, actually. Unless it's very unhealthy. And then we have to sometimes, again, just go through that. And go through it. Maybe get it or don't get it. But we stay awake through that whole process. We don't become unconscious.